My name is Candace. I'm with Drexel College of Medicine, and today I'm going to be talking to you about our Philadelphia Eugema Health Collaborative. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the work that really laid the foundation to our academic community partnerships, and then a little bit at the end about some of the strategies that we've used to even continue that partnership and move beyond what we were originally doing into continued programming. And I'd like to just acknowledge my colleague, Sarita Reels, who's also in the audience, and that this initiative was funded by the Office on Women's Health. And I have nothing to disclose. Okay. And so just to give you a little bit of background, Eugema is one of the Kwanzaa principles. It means collective work and responsibility. And so really from the beginning, the program embodied a philosophy that this was about everyone coming together to partner together to really address the health issues that we see and the disparities that we face in Philadelphia. And so some of the things that we were looking on, some of the metrics, was a health promotions intervention, and really looking on how can participants improve healthcare practices, use of preventive screening, self-care management, and then also how can we help our site partners augment their, you know, site capacity to participate in these projects, as well as their relationships amongst one another. So how can we help them collaborate together themselves and to sort of grow the collaborative process? And so just like many of the other speakers have discussed today, we utilize the CBPR process and many of the principles that are commonly discussed that, you know, all of the members were involved throughout all of the different components of the process. They were involved equitably, and we really tried to build on all of the organizational strengths. And so seeing what each partner had to bring to the table, how can we build upon their strengths and really have this embedded within a social change framework. And so the network collaborative that really involves many, many, many different types of partners, community members, academic partners, business, social service, faith-based organizations, government, a little bit of everyone at the table. And so some of the things that we've done, again, historically, we've had community engagement components where we've done outreach programs. We've done a numbers of training, lay health worker trainings, specific specialty programs, and then actual health promotion interventions. We've also had trainings with clinicians and providers. And the structure of the group also utilized work groups. And so partners were able to really concentrate on specific areas within the initiative. So again, some of the different components and successes, we've had over 100 outreach events. And again, the outreach component was really important so that we had a variety of different avenues upon which to address community concerns. So we had the outreach component that we've had over 3,500 participants. We've had subset, which is sort of the intervention and evaluation of those results with 517 people, quarterly follow-up, based on a quarterly follow-up. And then we have the lay health worker trainings that I mentioned, which again had the baseline and then the 1-year follow-up, as well as specialty programs, which we've had over 450 people participating in. Some examples of the specialty programs were like our Family Fun Fitness and Health Days, Take Your Loved One to the Doctor Days. And so again, these were more specific events to get really drum community participation and just to really promote the programs, as well as meet the community needs for creativity and ideas within all of the different partner sites. And so some of the programs' successes have definitely been around successfully engaging our community partners, continuing to grow the network, definitely in the development of assessment instruments. Again, like I said, we try to really, really be true to the CBPR process. And so the community partners were really involved at every stage, including the data development and all the assessment instruments. They were part of the data work group. They vetted all of the tools. And so the validation of, we use validated instruments, but they vetted all of those, what we use, how we use them. Some actually were modified based on their feedback. They also added questions. And so things that were of concern to them, they really began to understand the value of research and really wanted to learn more and gain more on how they could then better use evaluation and research to extend their capacities and write grants and to really also be able to talk more specifically about the missions and successes that they were having. So that was really a great success. definitely how the program was implemented. We use evidence-based strategies, but of course tailored to the different community needs. And then the health outcomes that we were able to see were definitely increased in a number of screenings, including colonoscopy, mammogram, blood pressure, blood sugar, increased fruits and vegetables, and physical fitness. And so really looking at, well, how are we able to do this, and what were some of the strategies that really promoted the successes and the continued successes of these partnerships and moving beyond even where we started. Definitely exploration of the community structure. We started with the community site assessment to really identify some of those strengths. You know, how is this going to be a win-win for every partner around the table? And so how are we going to be able to see, you know, what did everyone have to bring to the table, and how can we build that into the actual project? And then, you know, building and continuing relationships by really increasing our responsibility, our responsiveness and reliability. So whatever the needs were, we said, you know, this is really a partnership. So, you know, this is, again, obviously this is the tenets, this is what we've come together and agreed upon. But if there's other needs in the community that arise, other things that you want us to address, we will address them. And we kept stayed true to that. We use a variety of mechanisms to keep partners engaged. We all know that, you know, sort of at the beginning, there's a lot of interest, creativity, energy, and then sort of as these projects go on, sometimes because of the competing needs and challenges within the communities themselves, they and leadership changes and all of that, it becomes difficult to maintain over time. And so we use a variety of different mechanisms, including email blasts, mailings, and some of the specialty and appreciation programs were also used to, again, keep that energy going for the programs. And then continue to expand, so bring new voices, new partners, so that, again, continue to always ignite new energy to the process. Definitely, we've been successful in recruiting and retaining participants, really looking at culturally appropriate data instruments, again, having those community partners involved around the table to give their input and be embedded and feel like they were, you know, a part of the process, and so they took ownership over that. So when it was time to implement it, they had a role and they had a say and they had ownership over why they were using the tool, and they could explain to their own participants why we were doing what we were doing. And then ownership and financial responsibility also. And so there were resources allocated for the community partners. And I will also say that there also was technical assistance provided for some of the partners. And so while there were resources allocated, not all of the partners had the staff to be able to, you know, develop the budgets effectively so that we could, you know, help them to figure out how to utilize the resources. And so we did provide a fair amount, and we do provide a fair amount of technical assistance to our partners as well. And so we have sort of typical standard of how some of these advisory and steering committee boards work, but I think some of the things that have been different and that have helped us to be really successful within Philadelphia UGMA is to really have a very interactive advisory process. And so it involves every single community partner has representation, all of our stakeholders. It's very highly participatory. Our meetings are quite different than probably the most traditional. There are a lot of group works, a lot of sort of drilling down games, activities, trying to really, you know, really see what's going to work, really being creative and really engaging people into the process. Utilizing a lot of different communication strategies and really trying to highlight, you know, some of the nuances and help people to address, well, what are some of those underlying barriers that are contributing to the disparities, and how can we really work together, collaborate as communities, while we all might not have health as our number one mission, you know, i.e. the church or i.e. you know, a different educational organization, but recognizing that health and the disparities that we're talking about impact our populations no matter who we serve. And so how can we come together? How can we be creative? How can we creatively embed these things into our current programs and infrastructure? And so that sort of gives us to the logistics of the needs assessment that, you know, we did to really help identify, well, what are some of the challenges? What are some of the barriers? How do we do this? And that led us to the theoretical frameworks of, you know, really thinking about using a gender framework to see, well, what is really different? You know, how can we look at men and women, and not just the health issues, not just to say that obesity is a problem or and we need to, you know, help people increase their knowledge around fruits and vegetables or increase their knowledge around eating healthier, but what are some of those gender norms, those gender roles, those expectations that differ between men and women in our society, and how can we embed those in the programs to make them more successful? How can we utilize utilize community participatory approaches and cultural sensitivities to begin to, again, address additional barriers that are true for the participants that are going to be part of this project. And then our approach, really, you just use utilizing the true CBBR tenets and the cultural humility, you know, really allowing the project to be developed from the community and the collective, rather than, you know, sort of saying by collaborative, you know, we tell, you do, you know, and not those traditional metrics. Using inclusive language and, you know, really having demonstrable outcomes that we bring back to the communities to say, you know, this is what's happening, this is what's going on, these are some of the things that, these are our successes, these are our challenges, you know, what do you want to do with this data? So having it be really accessible to everyone. Being responsive, like I mentioned, to all the partner requests, providing those technical assistance when needed. And then also helping, again, to build it. So trying to help even some of our community partners identify funding opportunities so that they can grow their programs. And some of the times they didn't have the strong evaluation data, you know, within themselves. And so throughout this process that they were actually able to have data now that they could use for their own stakeholders and their own funders. And so they were really appreciative and have continued to grow within that network, develop the program budgets, like I mentioned as well. Having contextualized program, we have found always that these programs, if they're embedded within the overall context of the community, what's going on, what people care about, and what's, you know, what is important to them, that they're much more successful, and that it really addresses the real issues that they feel and face. Utilizing multiple strategies, you know, this is not a one size, you know, fits all. You know, it's definitely a delicate balance between having evidence-based strategies, but that the programs look a little bit differently at all of the different sites where they're implemented, and that people have the flexibility to have it be dynamic and to have it reflect the flavor of the populations that are being served. And that it's tailored and personal to those needs and to the environment and the culture of the different sites. And so first, involving the individuals. And so the first task is really for the people who are involved to be health advocates, you know, so that they can embody the mission of the program and reflect that and have that energy when they go out within their different community constituencies to really embody that and to recruit and to have a total understanding of what the goals and the mission of the project is about. And having those community partner sites and researchers really, you know, work together on the protocols, work together on every, you know, component of the project. And then the logistics, you know, having a range and diversity of collaborators is very, very important. You know, growing that network is very important, is very important to us. And as I mentioned, that contextualized program, embedding it into the things that are currently going on and that are important within the context of those communities. Having the programs be integrated into existing infrastructures has proved really, really an important strategy for us, because so many organizations are struggling, so many are also having the economic challenges, leadership turnover. You know, if this is something completely new, standalone thing, we find that it's much more difficult for, you know, especially some of the smaller organizations to have it be a separate standalone thing that they have to, you know, really commit a lot of time and energy to. But if they can say, well, we're already doing this, can we add this along with that? We already have this, you know, this really important focus area or this initiative. Maybe we can find a way to creatively recruit for this and this, or to group these two things together. Maybe we can add this component to what you're doing, and vice versa. And so the more that we can embed it into their current infrastructure and their processes for data collection and for recruitment and all of that, that was definitely a win-win. And then that also helped to build capacity within the organization as well. And so when we think about building strong partnerships, first and foremost, it definitely takes a lot of time and energy and a transparency dissemination of information, and really is, though, essential for sustainability over time, to put that time and energy in. Understanding organizational culture and identity is very, very important for success, and really just having an attitude of openness and flexibility where it's really necessary to engage those communities in research. And so since we have been successful, we've been able to continue that and to really not just, you know, sort of stop at the initial health promotion interventions, but like I said, really be able to work on conducting that needs assessment and now moving forward to a much more rigorous design of health promotion intervention using a gendered framework. And so thank you.
Thank you very much. It's, our last speaker was Candace Robertson-James. We have a little bit of time for questions. If you would direct your question directly to the person, if it is for a single individual, otherwise you can address it to the panel in general. Questions, please? Please. One, two, and on we go.
For Dr. John Butler, correct? You mentioned a data talking about children are twice as likely to die from bone marrow.
Not twice as likely. They have the highest. Ethnomedical professionals argue that they die disproportionately to bone marrow transplants than other groups because there are no registries for which they can access hers. So organizations like AMIA have developed some of the post bone marrow and kind of blood transfusion kind of places where you can get blood and donation centers because they don't exist.
Are there any websites that I can?
Literally, if you guys Google bone marrow multiracial, you're going to be like, are you kidding? This really exists. Really, I could also, and there's also the bone marrow registry, like the main one. I think it's like bonemarrow.com or something.
How about health disparities in terms of multiracial groups?
You know what? I can talk to you after and give you a whole. I've already
Thank
started
you.
Coming up with or I can email you. I've come up with some long literature. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's very, very, like I said, it's very, very small. That's why I'm sort of here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Please, the second.
My question is directed to Candace, I guess. I work in a health district. I don't have time or money, but I'd love to do what you're doing.
I'm going to take your seat, okay?
So you can talk. If you are the leader in this initiative, what is it that makes others follow you? And how do I kind of find time to get out of the weeds?
That's a great question. And so I think the first thing is it definitely takes time, meaning what I mean by time is, you know, we don't necessarily say I want a partnership today and by, 2 months from now we have a robust, partnership where everyone's working together. That's sort of what I mean. It takes time for all the parties at the table to get to know one another, to get to trust one another, just like in any relationship, right? And so we're building a relationship. We have to sort of see how we work together, what's important to you, what's important to me, can I trust you, all of that. So that's sort of what I mean by it takes time for us to establish that. One of the things that we were able to do is, build on what you do and what you're interested in and be, transparent throughout the process of this is what we're trying to do. This is why we're, why we think it's important and why we're interested in doing this. How does that reflect, with your mission and your goals? And is this of interest to you? And so we were able to identify champions, within the faith-based organizations, within the social service, the academic organizations, other, schools, others who are saying, we had a great partner who has academic programs for low-income, underserved individuals, and they were saying, well, yes, we're offering these programs, but guess what? Our members are missing class all the time because they're hypertensive. They're in the ER. They're doing it. So they were able to connect it. Yes, at the church, yes, we're calling the ambulance once every, 3 months because a diabetic didn't take their medicine when they're coming to church. And so, we were able to connect all of those dots and continue to grow it. And so once we had, what we felt like was a core group of people who were totally on board and saw the relevance, of the health, even though it wasn't their first, core tenet, that health had to be embedded within everything, was really, really important. And then it just, continued to grow from that part. I think if you can start with a small core, it'll grow, and you can be transparent and have those ambassadors, and then sort of decide on discrete projects that you can accomplish and be successful in, and then sort of grow it from there would be my recommendation.
Other questions, please?
I have a question for Ms. Detta. So I work at a hospital in the Bronx where a large portion of our population in a particular district is Cambodian and Vietnamese, having come over after the Khmer Rouge incident. And there's a lot of distrust or we've essentially worked through the process of distrust where it was, they were showing up just for care. We had treatment issues in terms of how things are being treated at home versus how we're expecting them to be treated. And we've gotten to the point now where we can have a conversation where people are really utilizing the center and the facility. But in looking at your site, which I like got all excited about, so I'm like, okay, great, this is a great place to refer them. Is that specifically for clinical and practice providers, or can community-based organizations and groups, you know, our group is called CAVA, can they use that as well?
No, it's open to all. I mean, the focus is actually community organizations. So whether it's a community organization that does advocacy around health issues, or whether it's a provider organization, it's pretty much, we want to cast the net as wide as possible so that if it has value to you, then you should take advantage of it. So I mean, there's no limitations on who can become a partner, and if, you know, there's no cost or whatever to become a partner, you just sign up. But then you have access to like a variety of different resources that we have. But again, like I said, it's open to anybody. We just have to, the only real requirement is that you can show that you, within your vision or mission of your agency, that you are addressing health disparities in some way, shape, or form. And that's really the only commitment that we ask. And beyond that, you can be a standalone provider, you can be part of a foundation, you can come from anywhere.
Are there any other questions? Please, one last question, and then we're due out of the room.
Sorry,
please.
This question is for Jung Miwa.
I mean, it's not all the name tags. What are you guys talking about? You're like, yeah. When you go to the beach, it's there.
Well, I was practicing before asking that question. Although there are definitions in that. When you look in the census category, then you can always find the definition, but how do you define non-Hispanic white?
Non-Hispanic white?
Yeah, in your own.
Well, I can refer you guys now, right now, because I work directly with the Racial Statistics Branch there at the Bureau. They have these briefs that are coming out now, and if you guys need some kind of demographic information, if you want to use regression, data sets, et cetera, they have one now on non-Hispanic whites. They're posted right now. Just, you know, any racial or ethnic group that you want to look up right now, just type that in, and there are these briefs that have just come out. I guess it's a plug for November, December, we have the Two More Races brief that's going to come out. And so there is one right now for that group. And just so you know, like the Bureau itself, because it's the largest statistical agency, it actually makes all of the surveys. They're like inside consultants that do all the surveys for CDC, for all the ones you're using anyway. People just think the census only collects every 10 years, but they're working nonstop all the time for all of your, you know, institutions. So you can find information on that. Because there's going to be a lot of changes for 2020. There are a lot of groups where identity matters for people, especially racial and ethnic identities, and how the literature says that deeply impacts. We can say it's class issue and it's gender and it's this, but at the center of that is because of how the U.S. history has been. Health disparities and race are kind of like, unfortunately, this way. But you can find all that information. That goes for everybody. Just Google it and it'll come up now. They just literally posted.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm supposed to end the session at this point. The conversation can be continued outside. Our speakers have agreed to do that. And can we thank them before you leave? Thank you. I think we had a great session. Thank you so much.